This episode is sponsored by Clutch. Clutch is a financial technology company that has been helping turn credit unions into fintechs since 2020. Our mission is to turn credit unions into fintechs, enabling them to serve their members with the best digital experience, lending products, and accounts opening abilities. To learn more, please visit www.withclutch.com.
From the Credit Union National Association, this is the CUNA News Podcast. Credit union people, credit union ideas.
Hi, I'm Yikeng Yang, Digital Media Design Specialist at CUNA. On this episode of the CUNA News Podcast, I speak with Nikki Henriksen, co-founder and CEO of fintech company WithClutch. Clutch's mission is to turn all credit unions into fintechs to enable them to serve the best digital experience and lending products to their members. And Nikki, along with co-founder Chris Coleman, are spearheading that mission. In this episode, we talk about topics ranging from the Silicon Valley bank collapse, future-proofing credit unions with fintech, hurdles and solutions to implementing fintechs, and more. Enjoy. Hey, Nikki, welcome to the CUNA News Podcast here. So before we get into it, tell the audience a little bit about yourself and what you do at WithClutch and what WithClutch is.
Sure. Well, first of all, thanks for having me. This is super fun. I'm from Germany originally, hence the funny accent. I was born and raised in Germany and moved to the US in 2011, 12 years ago, to go to business school. And then after 2 years of business school, my good friend and classmate, Chris Coleman, and I graduated from Stanford. He's a huge car enthusiast, loves cars. His first car was a DeLorean, you know, the one that with these doors that go up. And he tricked me into starting this business where we sold cars online, which we did for 4 years, and then ended up selling to Carvana before Carvana was public. So we joined Carvana in 2017, stayed for 3 years, did nothing else than build digital experiences for auto buying, auto selling, and auto financing. And then we left in 2020 to start a new business, going back to the roots, as I like to say, back to credit unions who had done a lot of indirect lending prior to selling to Carvana, and basically sat down with a number of our credit union friends and said, wouldn't it be super helpful if credit unions had a more digital experience? Because we believe credit unions have the best loan products, lowest rates, nonprofit status, deposits to lend out. So wouldn't it be great if all of consumer loans went to credit unions? And the main reason we believe that hasn't happened yet is because these direct-to-consumer fintech lenders have better digital experiences. And so they're kind of eating the market share away. For credit union to be relevant, I strongly believe credit unions need digital experiences like these direct-to-consumer fintech lenders. And so we started on the lending side, auto, personal unsecured loans, credit cards, HELOCs, then the recapture piece of that. So up and cross-selling loan products, up and cross-selling protection products. And now we just launched digital account opening to support credit unions even on their search for deposit, if that makes sense.
Great. Thanks for that intro. So we'll get into it here. So the SVB, the Silicon Valley Bank, collapsed last week. What does that mean for the fintech space in general and Clutch specifically?
Yeah, so we're very close to everything that happened because, A, the whole startup community is super tightly connected, which was part of the problem. And then as our business, we have $32 million in cash in the bank from venture capital investors. 5 million of those were with Silicon Valley Bank. And so when things started to kind of fall apart last Thursday, I got note of it and I saw the emails of other founders and on WhatsApp, everybody's talking, it's very well connected, which again is part of the problem. And since I couldn't log into online banking or call anyone, we got really nervous. And my co-founder happens to live next to a branch. So he managed to get into the branch, withdraw $5 million in a cashier's check and walk it across the street to our other bank accounts. We have four bank accounts, two of which are with credit unions because we strongly believe in supporting our credit union clients. But the problem was the Silicon Valley Bank had some unexpected losses, not even high in the grand scheme of things, but losses that led to the depositors, which are only startups primarily, lose confidence, which caused this bank run. And since 97% of the depositors had more than $250,000 in the bank, and since we're so well connected among founders, like it basically lit up like a big like fire, and people talked to each other, and then we panicked, frankly, withdrew the money, and then it really hurt Silicon Valley Bank. As a result, though, a lot of other financial institutions got a lot of deposits. And those financial institutions, those credit unions that we work with who supported digital account opening were actually winners of everything that happened because they attracted a lot of accounts and deposits. And so while, thankfully, the government stepped in and reassured us depositors that the money is safe, Silicon Valley Bank didn't make it. The good news is the other banks that were impacted quickly recovered. And I argue that the big winners could be credit unions because credit unions are organized very differently. Their balance sheets look very differently. They have short duration car loans versus long duration assets that are much less sensitive to interest rate changes. And then the depositor base, the average deposit is usually below the insurance limit. So if you look at some of our clients, 90% or more of the depositors have deposits that are below $250,000. And then the depositors are not so hyper-connected as startup founders. So they can't talk to each other as effectively. They can't WhatsApp each other and then create a panic. And so I'd argue credit unions are a super safe haven for capital. And credit unions will benefit from what happened.
So for someone who's not familiar with what happened to Silicon Valley Bank, what does exactly mean when it collapsed?
Yeah, so Silicon Valley Bank, think of it as the bank for startups. And startups tend to have a lot of cash in the bank because we get literally millions of dollars from investors. And then Silicon Valley Bank, 97%, I believe, of the depositors were startups with amounts larger than $250,000. And so money is usually safe at these banks. The tricky part is ensuring amounts above $250,000 isn't done by the FDICs. There's other mechanisms. And so now imagine your bank loses money unexpectedly and announces that and says everything will be fine if you don't panic. Well, the only thing that you cause by that is you create a panic amongst the depositors who are incredibly well connected. We're all on WhatsApp together. We can talk to each other. On email, we're like, hey, are you going to withdraw your money? I think I will. Oh, God, if you do it, I'll do it. And then it caused a bank run. And since Silicon Valley Bank, although they had the assets that were invested in long-term assets, the depositors are basically liabilities. Silicon Valley Bank owes that cash to us depositors. And if we all show up at the same time, which I think was around $49 billion that was withdrawn in a single day, like no bank could sustain that. No bank has that much cash available. And so that led to a collapse of that bank.
So digital account opening is the big topic these days. It means different things to different people. And what does that mean for Clutch?
Yeah, very good question. So when we started, we had a bunch of tailwinds that we didn't even realize we had. At the time, COVID had started, so branches were closed. Through stimulus checks, consumers had received a lot of cash, but they deposited in the bank account and then they paid off loans. And so all of a sudden, credit unions had excess deposits and really needed to find means to lend them out. And then after leaving Carvana, we showed up and told a narrative around, we want to help you, credit union, lend more digitally. And that seemed the right theme given where we are in the time of technology. But it was even more so relevant at the time because credit unions had these excess deposits and couldn't lend through branches. So we had a really, really strong, what I would call product market fit when we launched. And so that allowed us to grow exponentially over the last 2 years. We went from zero credit union clients to 67 today. And then last summer, things shifted a little bit. And this is what impacted Silicon Valley Bank too. When interest rate increased, money was looking for ways to be deployed into assets that yielded higher returns. And so these deposits started to disappear. And credit unions noticed last summer, with this trend, we risk running out of cash to deploy. So we need to find ways to attract more deposits, which you can do with offering CD promotions and other good financial products. But if you advertise that widely and the consumers want to go to your website and it's difficult to open an account, and maybe for the financial institution even forces you to go to the branch, then the consumer will just go to another fintech and open an account there and get that yield there. And so I'd argue now is the perfect time to think about a joint experience, not only the loan side of things that we already built, but add a digital account opening experience that makes it easy for consumers and even businesses open an account and deposit money with a credit union. And so naturally, that was an extension where we always wanted to go. Now we found the right moment in time to do it. The good news is we're sitting on top of your existing systems. So you don't need to change anything. We can support your infrastructure. You just need a better user experience, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that does make sense. To me, it just seems like the easier you can make the process, you know, more people are going to come to you.
We need to argue, there's actually two nuances, right? You need to remove friction from the process so it's easy on the consumer. And if your experience is frictionful, and there's a direct-to-consumer fintech that provides a frictionless experience, then consumers will automatically end up there because they're impatient, like attention spans are so short. The other thing I'd argue is it's becoming table stakes. Like if you want to bank within a financial institution, you have certain expectations around, you have to support me, get a loan or deposit online. I don't want to go to the branch. That's really old school. And so in a number of conversations we're having with our prospects and clients, the topic around, okay, what does it cost come up? And I'd argue you can't pay enough for it. It's table stakes. You need it. And we're trying to be as reasonable as possible. And we'll always present a case that the software actually pays for itself. You have a very positive ROI of 10x what you pay us. But the discussion could be as easy as you just have to have it.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. So credit unions need to progress and adapt. What needs to change within the credit union to accelerate things?
So we have the fortune of having, I mean, me personally talked to probably 350 credit unions at this point, if not more. In every conversation, we learn something. I've never run a credit union. So everything we build heavily depends both on our existing clients who give us feedback, as well as prospects who kind of indicate what's the next thing they need. When we sell to credit unions or talk to credit unions, what credit unions do, they come up with a strategic plan at the beginning of the year and then have quarterly initiatives. And so they have products and initiatives that are force ranked. And if you finish the first one, then you start going to the second one. If you finish the second one, you go to the third one. The problem we are running into is sometimes the priorities are not necessarily aligned with like the long-term vision and goal of the credit union. Some credit unions, I just talked to one today that says, well, our number one project after this one that we're finishing is figuring out a website chat solution. That argue, yeah, that's an important tool. But there's other products that A, would generate a much higher ROI short-term even, and B, future-proof your institution. Like you need to stay relevant. A chatbot doesn't make you stay relevant. It solves a certain problem. But in order to stay relevant, you need to be able to look at direct-to-consumer fintechs and say with full consciousness and feel good about my experience is as good or even better than that one. And that's why I'm going to win. And so we're trying to help our credit unions prioritize and reprioritize their projects and not end up in this fallacy of, okay, but it's an expensive piece of software. No, it's table stakes and it'll pay for itself. And so these conversations sometimes take longer than I'd love it to be.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. If you want to see progress and change, you have to invest in it, even though it's expensive at first, but it's something you need to do.
It's an investment. I wouldn't call it an expense. It's an investment in the future. And you can choose multiple paths. You can choose, I just want to do what I've done so far. And you hear that language often, Cranes, we've always done it that way. Well, if you have a very specific niche and your members are super loyal and are happy as is, then don't invest because you already have a good product as the credit union. The majority of credit unions feel differently. The majority of credit union leaders feel they're scared. There's like a healthy level of anxiety around, will we stay relevant? Will my job continue to exist? And the root cause of that fear is the change in consumer behavior driven by competitors such as the direct consumer fintech companies that have done a very good job in creating frictionless experience, and they just raised the bar for everyone.
The credit union ecosystem consists of a lot of players. Who do you see as most critical, and how can each player help make credit unions future-proof?
So going into the credit union space, we understood what an indirect loan is because we had sent a lot of loan volume to credit unions such as Golden One and Redwood at the time when we still ran our company where we sold cars before we sold to Carvana. And then when we started talking to credit unions, we started to get a much better understanding of the different technology stacks. So naturally, you have a core system, and then you have an online banking system or digital banking system, then you have an LOS. Then you have user experiences on top. And so the hard part about serving many credit unions or a large portion of the credit unions is that this tech stack differs quite a lot from credit unions to credit unions. And so the more we can standardize the building blocks of what the technology looks like, the easier it is to focus our efforts on building better experiences on top instead of spending a lot of time integrating with more and more systems. And so there's probably three core banking systems that are most common in the credit union space. And so everybody who's looking to make a transition or every credit union that is disappointed that fintechs that are here to help the credit movement are not able to integrate, you have to make the move to a more standardized stack. Same is true with online and mobile banking. There's 100 different providers. Well, 4 or 5 of them probably have 70% market share. Switch over to one of those. Or it's the same thing. There's 50 loan origination system. There's probably 4 or 5 that have 80% market share and that are modern and have API connections that companies like us can integrate with. Move there. Don't force us to integrate with a small little player that nobody supports and uses other than maybe a handful of small cranes. We want to support every single crane. We just need to standardize things. Otherwise, we end up in my co-founder always calls it integration warfare, where we continuously integrate to yet another piece, but we don't actually improve the product, if that makes sense.
What's the take of Silicon Valley-based venture capital investors on credit unions?
That's a good question. So when we first started this business and explained to our partner from Andreessen Horowitz, which Andreessen Horowitz is probably one of the top three, if not top two, venture capital funds in Silicon Valley, when we explained to them we want to build software for credit unions, they got really nervous because they said, well, A, we're not convinced these credit unions will exist in 10, 15, 20 years from now, number one. And number two, those seem like institutions that are very hard to sell to. How can you grow as fast as we need you to grow to create a business that's large enough to matter? And the way we responded to that is, number one, we think credit unions should dominate consumer lending. So the reason they will exist is because of players like us that support the movement and empower them, turn them into fintechs, make them more competitive. And then the second aspect, how do you sell to them? But the most important thing is to build relationships. And so we're fortunate enough to have a strong partnership with CUNA Mutual, for example, who they don't control what we do in the day-to-day, but we're closely aligned with them, and they make introductions to credit unions that we're very friendly with and want to serve. And so we're trying to leverage personal relationships to the extent possible to build personal relationships. And then the good news is if you have a good product, credit unions actually end up talking to each other. They're very friendly, very collaborative. And so while it's really, really hard to break in, if we do the right thing, build the relationships and earn the trust, the credit union movement will give back by trusting us because they all talk to each other. And so if you ask Silicon Valley, I think you get two answers. There'll be a lot of investors will tell you we don't have a lot of confidence in credit unions and we wouldn't want to invest in a company that serves the movement. And that may be the majority of venture capital investors, which is why they're investing in these fintechs. But then there's a small group, and that's often driven by us entrepreneurs really, really telling that story and that narrative around credit unions should exist. They should dominate consumer lending, and it'll be entrepreneurs like us who help the movement be successful. And in order to help credit unions, we somehow need credit unions to help us too, which is why we're so thankful for the relationship we've built so far and the existing partners who've demonstrated to be really, really strong referrals for us. And like, we couldn't do it without our existing clients and then the big stakeholders in the industry who lend credibility to what we're doing.
What role do the legacy software providers play in the digital transformation of credit unions?
Yeah, that's a tricky one. So there's what you'll see in we call it vertical software markets, where you have a vertical and you have a limited amount of customers. Like credit unions, there's 5,000. Banks, there's another 3,500. So if you build a banking core, you have 5 plus 3,500 potential customers. If you sell a payroll provider, for example, or payroll software, you literally have millions of businesses you can sell to. So when you're in a vertical market, you need to really understand the use case and you need to be building software that's very, very valuable. And so there's a lot of software providers who became very large and very successful because they had amazing products. And then the tricky part, though, is, at least from the Crayon's perspective, once you lean on a software provider, you're kind of in and you're kind of stuck. And these businesses, once they become big, they're often overtaken by private equity investors, for example, who realize that switching costs are really high. The cost for a Crayon to switch away from this system to another is very high. And I'm willing to pay a premium and constantly, I'm willing to accept constantly increasing prices on existing software because it's so expensive to switch. And so that's a little bit where I think part of the challenge in the space originates from is if a company has discovered that I'm satisfied with the scale I reached, the way I'll grow further is to raise prices and just heavily rely on the fact that it's very difficult and prices to switch away from me, you create incentives where innovation isn't that important anymore. And so that's okay because these are foundational elements of the tech stack of a credit union, but that means the responsibility on us is much higher because we're super agile. Our incentives are we need to grow, we need to provide value, we have yet to prove it. And so the legacy software providers built the foundation, but given where they are in their life cycle, they don't have very strong incentives to innovate. Neither are they able to innovate as quickly as we can because we had the benefit of starting greenfield. And so I'd argue these partnerships between the legacy software providers and startups like us are super valuable. We make their existing products even better, and we can innovate at a pace that just outpaces what large companies can do.
And how do you ensure a continuously strong and high-touch relationship with your credit union clients as your organization grows rapidly?
Yeah, that's a tough one, and it's one of our biggest investments. When we started the business, frankly, when we talked to credit unions and sold products, I strongly believe that a strong piece of what our initial clients bought was the relationship to us founders, and they kind of placed a bet on us. It wouldn't have mattered what exactly the product would have done because, much like our investors, they believed that we cared enough and we had enough stamina and willingness to make a difference that we would build something eventually that provides a lot of value. And so there's a transition in every young company away from what we call founder-led sales and support to an organization taking over. So we're hiring people who do that, and we're creating jobs and incentives within the building that lead to, and a culture that lead to exceptional customer service, very high-touch experiences, or at least experiences that feel very high-touch, and then ultimately lead to these strong relationships. And so the way you grow that is A, through like very, very clearly articulated values, number one. And number two, you just hire exceptional people who care as much as we do. Like one of our values, key values, is responsiveness trumps everything. What I'm trying to say with that is it's so important that if a client of ours emails us or calls us, that we immediately respond and tell the client, we got this, we heard you. And we'll put you into a priority queue right now and we'll attack your issue, number one. And number two, spend time and listening to clients. They've run these credit unions for many, many years, and we really rely on their expertise and feedback in order to improve what we're doing. So when I say responsiveness trumps everything, I mean getting back to our clients quickly and listening. And so can I guarantee it for the foreseeable future or for the rest of the life of the company? I don't know. I can tell you we're making big investments both in creating a culture that serves the credit movement and cares about it, and we're hiring the best people possible who have this DNA and share the values that we have as founders. And therefore, for as long as the company is run by my co-founder, our leadership team, myself, I can guarantee you we will provide that service.
Yeah, I feel like that's so important in any business, really. Just personally for me, if I need help with something I bought or just a product I have, I kind of judge the business on how quickly they get to me and how much they care. And that's even more important with financial business where people are dealing with their money and they need help with their money right away.
You do. That's exactly right. When the Silicon Valley Bank issue happened last week, I immediately said to my co-founder, there's three things we need to do. We need to save the money, we need to tell our team what happened, and we need to inform our clients that we are unaffected. And so thankfully, we were able to act super quickly. Chris managed to go to the branch, withdraw the money, it was safe. We immediately communicated to the teams, like, here's what's going on. You probably don't even know it yet, but you will see a fallout happening. And then lastly, even before the weekend, we sent 252 emails to our credit union clients and prospects explaining, here's what happened. You may or may not know. Here are the implications. Here's why it doesn't affect us. Here's the steps we're taking to check that our vendors, our critical vendors, aren't affected. And if you have any question, here's my personal cell phone. And so we've done what we could, and the feedback we've received was very positive. The credit union has told us, oh, wow, you're an incredible partner. Thank you for being so proactive. I argue this is totally table stakes serving a financial institution, and I'm looking forward to maintaining that type of relationship as well as the service level, if you want to call it so.
Yeah, definitely. How can credit unions help you help them?
In a lot of ways. When we present what we do, we talk to very different people in the building. And to the first people in the credit union we used to usually talk to tend to be executives. And so selling a credit union leader on the vision, you need to invest in technology to stay relevant. That's actually a relatively easy message to get across. And then if we present what we do, we often get the feedback, wow, this looks too good to be true. You remove friction from the process. It looks so sick. We want this yesterday. And then when we really talk about what this product look like and implementation look like, we talk to people who are a little bit more in the day-to-day of the business or the credit union operations. And so those folks, they have so much to do that efficiency gains are incredibly important for them. They basically created ways to do things that made them really efficient. And so if things change even by a tiny little bit in their day-to-day role, those folks that I would do the same and you would do the same, they get nervous. It's like, no, can we not do it like we did it yesterday? The whole transition that we're trying to support is a digital transformation, which means there will be change. We try to keep it as minimum as possible, but there will be change. And so when you ask me, how can a credit union help us, help the credit union, we need people in the building who buy into the story to then also tell that story internally. I can do that. Our team can do it, but we can't be the scapegoat of change. We need to be the entity that helps the leadership team transform themselves digitally. And so if you ask me, how can the credit union help us? Lean on us, because we try to really understand what we're doing and understand the clients and build software that's relevant, and then help us with, for lack of a better word, change management in the building if need be. But what makes it very difficult for us is if we present what we do over and over again, we often don't have a lot of visibility into what's the process in the building for the credit union to actually make a decision. And so then sales cycles tend to be really, really long, which for us, this sometimes feels like, oh, there's a lack of interest, and that's okay. A quick no is so much better than a slow no. Usually it's a slow yes, and so we could provide visibility into the process of understanding what's going on behind the scenes, how decisions are made. That's a big help. And then the change management piece, if once we sign up and decide to partner together, have the credit union champions in the building tell the same story, like hold up the same flag that we're helping, hoping to hold up and achieve in terms of digital transformation, and then communicate that to the team members whose jobs may be impacted, not in terms of you don't have a job anymore. It's like, no, your job will be easier and better. It's just a little change to how you've done things in the past.
Changing gears a little bit here, will you ever work with and or sell to banks as well?
Yeah, we get that question a lot. This ultimately is a question of the, we call it TAM, total addressable market. How big a business can we build within the Ukrainian space? And the reason that matters is we're blessed to have raised a lot of venture capital from investors who believe there's a big opportunity ahead of us. If we're limiting ourselves to credit unions, which I think is a huge space and I love the space and the movement, we need to be able to extract enough value to justify the size of the company or the investment, I should say. And so that doesn't mean I want to get paid a lot for what I do. No, that means I want to do a lot. And so we started with an auto refinance feature. We grew that into a point of sale experience that up and cross sells loan products and up and cross sells insurance products to drive non-interest revenue. We grew that into a digital deposit account opening solution. And so we continuously expand the offering. And so at some point, we'll be, and this is not too far away, we'll embed the credit union's loan products into affiliate networks such as Credit Karma, drive new traffic, both for deposits and loans, help and remove friction from the process of originating the loan, maybe take it all the way to digital underwriting and then funding the loan, all the way to potentially even servicing the loan. So there's a lot of technology needs. I strongly believe the Ukrainian space is way big enough for us to build a large business where we add so much value that the ultimate value of the company will be so large that everybody wins and we never have to leave the Ukrainian space, which is my primary goal today for sure.
What is your exit strategy?
Good question. So Chris and I got incredibly lucky. We started a company before, sold it to Carvana, and then had a good financial outcome and like an incredible learning experience. Now going back, we're even more blessed by our ability to raise money and find something really meaningful to do. And so at this point, Chris and I would really like to build the biggest business possible, stay independent for as long as possible, if not forever. And it goes back to the question, will we ever leave the market and tap into other markets? I'd argue that the market that is ahead of us in the Ukrainian space and the value we can create to turn these Ukrainians into fintechs can be so massive that we never even think about leaving the industry and or the company. So for Chris and me, ideally, this is the last job we have and we don't mind working a lot and we don't mind working many hours and many years. We strongly believe there's a lot of impact we can have over a long period of time and have very little interest, close to zero, if not zero interest in ever selling the business to either another software provider or to an investor who finds it to be a valuable business. So we love to stay independent and enjoy our independence every day.
Thanks for listening to the CUNA News Podcast. Subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and Stitcher Radio.
This podcast is sponsored by Clutch, turning credit unions into fintechs one credit union at a time. To learn more, visit www.withclutch.com.